You're listening to PetLifeRadio.com. Is your pet stressed out? Does your pet need annual vaccines? Which pet is best for a child? Would you know if your dog was in pain? Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor, where you'll learn everything about keeping your pet healthy and happy. From pet care, pet meds and grooming, to pet food, pet insurance and dental care, this is the place to find out everything there is to know about pet wellness. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets, because it's your pet. Health matters. Please welcome your Pet Doctor host, veterinary media consultant and veterinarian, Dr. Bernadine Cruz.
Several times a week, clients will ask me how to ensure that their pets will live a long, health-filled life. I usually reply that it's a matter of veterinary care, diet, genetics, and luck. We don't have much control over genetics and luck, but as pet parents, we have tremendous sway over what goes into our pet's bowl and mouth. In 2015, Americans spent over $60 billion on pet food, with veterinary care coming in somewhere around $15 billion. But is all of that money on pet food being well spent? Are we overfeeding and giving less than optimal nutrition to our furry family members? Can some of the most serious medical conditions, such as kidney disease and cancer, be positively affected by modifying what we feed? My guest is Dr. Kaylin Hines. She is board-certified veterinary nutritionist at Cummings School of Veterinary Medicine at Tufts University, where she teaches biochemistry and clinical nutrition. She's an expert in home-cooked diet formulation and general pet nutrition, and has a special interest in feeding pets with kidney disease and cancer. Dr. Hines has been featured in Eating Well, WebMD, Prevention Magazine, and Dog Fancy, and she regularly speaks at national and international veterinary conferences. So grab your pen and paper. I know you're going to want to take some notes to help you digest this very important subject. We'll be right back after this short break.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
It's DesignerPetSweaters.com, hand-knitted designer sweaters for your precious pup or cool cat. Beautiful couture patterns for your pets, including custom-knitted formal wear, casual wear, yachting, and even sports-themed. Many designer pet sweaters include feathered tammy hats, top hats, and a lot of sparkle. Each sweater includes leg loops, front paw sleeves, and leash opening. Visit DesignerPetSweaters.com to order your four-legged fashions today. Your pets will stay warm for the winter and be runway ready. Large or small, we fit them all. DesignerPetSweaters.com.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com. Welcome back to the Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio. The doctor is in, and we'll see you now.
Dr. Hines, thank you for being with us. Nutrition is such a critical area of veterinary care that so many people do not understand. Veterinarians don't understand. So thank you for being with us today.
I'm happy to be here. Thanks for the invite.
Give us a little bit of background. Who is Kaylin Hines, and how did you become a board-certified veterinary nutritionist? Are there many of you?
There are approximately 80 board-certified veterinary nutritionists in the U.S. There's another organization that certifies veterinarians for nutrition in Europe, but I'm not sure exactly what their numbers are. But it is definitely one of the smaller veterinary specialties. I kind of got there in a roundabout way. It's actually not what I thought I would do coming out of veterinary school. I knew I wanted to be an academic. I wanted to teach at a veterinary teaching hospital, but it wasn't the specialty that I thought that I would end up in. And, you know, kind of fate led me into private practice for a few years, and I realized that I was spending a lot of my time talking about nutrition. And I'd always been very interested in nutrition, and I'd always been very interested in biochemistry, and the two are very closely related. And so kind of one thing led to another, and I realized that that might be a good career fit for me. And so I started looking into options for getting more training in nutrition, and ended up at UC Davis, which has an excellent, both a school of nutrition, to graduate degrees in nutrition, but also has an excellent program for training veterinary nutritionists. And so I did my residency, moved to California, did my residency there, and stayed and got a master's degree in nutrition while I was there, and then moved to Tufts. And so my practice is limited to clinical nutrition, and then I teach biochemistry.
A very good combination. And I'm glad you said that Davis was such an excellent school, because, of course, I am a graduate of UC Davis. So thank you for that little plug. One of the things that we see just way too often in veterinary medicine is kidney disease. One of my own kitties, it was a 16-year-old matriarch of the family, earlier this year passed on because of kidney disease. And sometimes when I have this diagnosis for a client, it's like, where did this come from? I had no idea. How common is kidney disease in cats, and is it more common in cats than dogs, or vice versa?
I don't have the exact numbers, but I can say that at the teaching hospital level, it's very, very common. It's one of the more common reasons why a dog or a cat would see our internal medicine service here at Tufts, and also a very common reason why they would see me as a nutritionist. I would say that probably 40 to 50% of my caseload is dogs and cats with kidney disease. So it's certainly a common disease. In geriatric cats, it's probably one of the most common diseases. And again, I don't know, have the exact numbers, but I think that there's probably no one who has had more than a few cats in their teens who hasn't had at least one of them that's had at least some minor kidney changes. So it's certainly very, very common.
Clients are always so devastated with this diagnosis and want to know all the things that they can do. And sadly, there is no way that we can stop the disease. But as I was reading recently in one of my journals, that diet, if you change the diet and can modify it, and the cats are willing to eat it, or dogs are willing to eat it, that sometimes you can double the survival time. Would you agree with that?
Yes. Kidney disease is actually one of the diseases that, from a nutrition perspective, is the most rewarding to treat, because it is a disease that diet is probably the main treatment that we have. You know, we have medications and fluids and stuff like that, but most of that's geared towards treating the symptoms. It's not geared towards actually slowing down the progression of the disease. But there have been some really good studies in dogs and cats that have shown exactly what you suggested, that feeding an appropriate diet during kidney disease can potentially double survival and the lifespan compared to feeding just kind of like a normal over-the-counter type diet.
Speaking of over-the-counter foods, the plethora of foods that are out there is mind-boggling. And it seems though, again, most of the pet parents are coming in saying, oh, yes, I'm feeding the most expensive food. I don't see how this could have happened. It's most expensive. It is going to be organic. It's grain-free. It's high protein. Do these make a difference?
That's interesting. It's pretty good timing on that, because I actually just wrote an article for our blog, Pet Foodology, where I talked about kind of the premiumization of pet food and how we have all of these pet foods. And a lot of my clients come in, you know, that they're very proud that they're feeding these very, very expensive products. But the challenge is that a lot of it is marketing. It's not science. And so companies add ingredients and they use really emotional kind of marketing to make you feel like the prices that you're paying for the foods are justified. But from a nutritional perspective, a scientific perspective, and potentially a quality control perspective, not all of the highest priced foods live up to, you know, being a good value for the price. And when it comes specifically to kidney disease, the kind of diets that we need to treat kidney disease are not the kind of diets you're going to be able to buy over the counter. And so that's one of the bits of resistance that I see with pet owners, is they're not happy with the ingredients or the companies that make some of the veterinary therapeutic diets that we use to treat kidney disease. And the challenge is that there are laws in place for what nutrient levels have to be in pet foods to be sold over the counter. And so those products that are sold over the counter don't necessarily have the appropriate nutrient levels for pets with kidney disease, because they're legally not allowed to. And so there's a lot of complicated regulation that goes into the therapeutic diets, but this is a disease where in most cases, it's really critical to feed that diet that your vet recommends, as opposed to, you know, feeding what the pet store employee or the internet suggests that you should feed.
So just because it's expensive doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to be feeding your pet's medical condition the way that it needs to. So it may have byproducts, and you're so opposed to byproducts, but it is a prescription diet. It is a diet that is specific for a particular condition.
Exactly. Yep. And I mean, some of the fancier diets over the counter may not even be the best situation for your healthy pet. But definitely when we have, you know, when we have diseases, particularly diseases like kidney disease that we know are so amenable to nutritional modification, we need to look at the nutrient levels. We need to look at the diets that have a proven track record rather than, you know, worrying as much about individual ingredients that the internet may tell us, you know, aren't good. Because a lot of that just is based on marketing and isn't based on actual knowledge. And so when we look for a diet with a pet for kidney disease, some of the more important nutrients, probably the most important nutrient for most animals with kidney disease, is phosphorus. Because we have pretty good data that shows that if your blood phosphorus increases with kidney disease, your kidney disease gets worse. And so what we want to do is we want to keep that blood phosphorus as low as we can without causing signs of being too low for as long as we can. And that's been shown to be directly related to the survival time with kidney disease. And to put things in perspective, the therapeutic diets you get from your veterinarian for a pet with kidney disease may have a quarter of the amount of phosphorus that you're going to find in the average over-the-counter type diet. They may have even less than that in comparison to the diet that you may be purchasing from a pet store. So that is a huge, huge part of managing kidney disease. Other nutrients that we think about would be...
Now, Dr. Hines, before we go further, because I was going to say controlling phosphorus, that's not something that people see as sexy, see on the label, but they do see protein. And isn't that where the phosphorus is coming from? And you're saying, okay, it's a high protein diet. Boy, that has to be good because I have a dog and it's, you know, eating like a wolf, or I have a cat and it's eating like a lion. Those are high protein foods.
Yeah. And so the most bioavailable, meaning the phosphorus that your body can use the most easily, typically does come from meat. But you do get phosphorus from plants as well. But it's a little bit more unknown about how easily your body can utilize the phosphorus from plants. It's certainly not as available as the phosphorus from meats. And so we honestly don't know what the ideal protein level is for most dogs and cats with kidney disease. That's not as well worked out as the phosphorus, but the values that increase in the blood, specifically the BUN, that when your pet has kidney disease increases, that BUN is a breakdown product of protein. And so the more protein you feed, the higher the levels of BUN and some other things we don't measure in the blood. And those other things can make your pet feel sick. And so can decrease the appetite, can lead to your pet, you know, really feeling ill versus just having abnormal values on blood work. And so in the later stages of kidney disease, as the kidneys are functioning less and less well, we need to minimize the amount of protein to keep those levels as well controlled as we can, because that's one of the big functions of the kidney, is getting rid of the breakdown products of protein. And so your body only needs so much protein. Your body doesn't store protein like you store fat. And so if you feed more protein than the body needs, your body just breaks it down and pees it out, basically. And that works great if your kidneys are functioning. So there's no evidence that a high protein diet causes kidney issues. But once you have kidney issues, a high protein diet, or even, you know, a kind of a normal protein diet, if your kidneys are really bad, can lead to higher levels of the toxins in your blood because your kidneys aren't able to get rid of them. And so diets that are designed for pets with kidney disease generally have lower levels of protein compared to typical diets that are out there, particularly the higher protein diets that are popular currently. And so, you know, that's always the challenge, is we try to match the protein level to the level of disease. We don't want to go to the lowest protein diet with early kidney disease, but if you have end-stage kidney disease, then feeding a lower protein diet may be important. And there are some types of kidney disease where it may be important to feed a lower protein diet earlier.
What are some of the other nutrients that are important for a pet that has kidney disease? What should they look for?
We try to avoid high sodium. All of the therapeutic diets are low in sodium, so that's not really something we have to think about too much. But it certainly can be an issue with treats and human foods that we tend to like to feed, particularly
so sodium pets with salt, basically.
Not good appetites. Exactly.
Okay.
Most of the diets designed for pets with kidney disease have increased amounts of B vitamins, with the idea that you may be losing more if you're peeing more, which all pets with kidney disease generally do. And then probably the other big thing that we look at is omega-3 fatty acids, specifically from fish oil, because there's some evidence in a couple studies that they may have some benefits for kind of helping to maintain kidney function. And so usually we'll supplement dogs or cats with kidney disease with fish oil.
And that's one of the things that when people start realizing that their pets are ill, they're going to be needing going into the veterinarian more frequently for follow-up blood work, and there's a special diet and it costs a lot more sometimes than what they've typically been feeding. They try to economize whenever possible. And one of the things saying, okay, I want your pet on fish oils, fatty acids, they can be kidney protective. Well, can I just go to a big box store and get some of the over-the-counter? Or I take fish oils, can I just give them mine? Is that typically something that they can do?
It depends on the product, but yes, we recommend both products that are made specifically for animals and often human products. The biggest issue with any supplements is quality control, because supplements aren't regulated very much at all by the government. And so generally, the FDA has to prove there's a problem to stop a supplement from being marketed. The companies don't have to prove that they're safe or meet label claim to market them. And I think a lot of people don't understand quite how government regulation of supplements works. And so it's really important to pick a fish oil supplement that has been through third-party quality control. So somebody, Consumer Reports, Consumer Lab, you know, some other third-party group has actually verified that what they say is in it is actually what's in it. And so that's a big issue for us. The other issue with fish oils is some products, particularly cod liver oils, will have added vitamin A and D. And particularly the human products, the needs for vitamin D in many people is significantly higher than in dogs and cats. And so some of the human products that have added vitamin A or D, if they're dosed at higher doses in pets, can actually lead to too much vitamin D when you add to the amount that's already in the diet. And so those are probably the two biggest issues in using the human products and even some of the veterinary products, is avoiding products with added vitamin A and D, specifically if the company can't tell you exactly how much is in each time and actually adjust that with each batch, and making sure that you're using a product that is high quality and has in it what the label says it has in it.
The other thing, Dr. Hines, I know, again, people trying to economize, or they go, okay, I take flaxseed and I add it into my cereals and my food and I put it in my smoothies in the morning. Why can't I just use something like flaxseed? You're telling me I need to use fish oils. Flaxseed is a great source of omega-3 fatty acids. Why can't I use that?
You are going right for the biochemist in me. But basically, I can tell you that the lecture I give to my students on this is much longer. But in a nutshell, there are different kinds of omega-3 fatty acids. And while our bodies can convert, and our dogs as well, can convert the omega-3 fatty acids that are found in flax to the kind that are found in fish oil, the conversion rate's very, very low. So in human women or female dogs, it's maybe 10 to 15% gets converted. In cats, it doesn't get converted really at all, not really measurable amounts. And so what that means is, to see the efficacy that they saw with fish oil in these studies, you would have to give 6 to 10 times as much flax as fish oil. And so that's really not practical. And there's not really a way that you can tell the body, okay, you need to convert this much and you need to move it to the kidneys. You know, the body tends to use the omega-3 in fish oil for other things, like burning it for energy, whereas it's more likely to use the omega-3 type that come from fish oil specifically for anti-inflammation and some other of the mechanisms which they work.
The other thing that is always, again, very frustrating, so often kidney disease will happen, and it seems to be very insidious, the onset for an older cat or a dog. And they come in and, oh, by the way, it has heart disease, it has arthritis, it has kidney disease, maybe it's on the verge of being a diabetic, it has all these concomitant diseases. And it's like, all right, which one do you address first? Do you address them all? Sometimes one medication for one disease will be contraindicated for another. How do you, as a nutritionist, recommend handling these concurrent diseases? Which one do you choose first?
Yeah, I mean, it depends what the combination is, but I usually look at which ones are the most likely to actually have a response to diet. And, you know, other than food allergy, probably the most responsive disease to diet is generally going to be kidney disease. And so often the kidney disease, particularly if it's later stage disease, is going to take precedent. And then I make everything else kind of fit with it. Because there's a lot of diseases like heart disease. Omega-3s and low sodium is the majority of what we do for dogs with heart disease. That fits in just fine for treatment of kidney disease. So from a medical perspective, treatment for those two diseases can be a real challenge because it's not necessarily the same. But from a nutritional perspective, they overlap pretty heavily. So that makes that reasonably easy. Diabetes can be a bit of a challenge in cats because there is a lot of veterinarians now are using more lower carbohydrate diets for cats with diabetes. The challenge is that if you're lowering protein in the diet, it's hard to lower carbohydrate as well. So it's hard to have a low protein, low carbohydrate diet. You're basically feeding your cat mostly fat, and you know that's not necessarily terribly feasible. So sometimes those diseases come a little bit more in conflict. The thing is that for the majority of cats, we have alternative treatments. We have insulin. You know, we don't have the equivalent of insulin for kidney disease. And so, you know, diet is the main treatment that we have. And so generally, you know, I'll look for the diet that is best for the kidneys, but is the best compromise for, you know, for the other disease.
And you were talking about, you know, palatability is something that you're trying to offer. Here's going to be this high fat diet, might taste good. But oftentimes with these sick animals, it's like nothing seems to taste good. And now we're taking them off of their regular food and saying, okay, this is what we want you to eat. And at least with my own cat, Divot, when she was 16, I played the game. I tried all the renal diets, the kidney diets, and she looked at me and it's like, this isn't going to happen. What do you do in that case? How do you try to make the food a bit more palatable?
Yeah, well, there's a lot of different things. And cats are harder than dogs. In cats, they tend to be more picky about food changes. And even in earlier kidney disease, it can be harder to get them to eat an appropriate diet. That said, there's a lot of new kidney diets on the market in the last 2 or 3 years. And so palatability, I would say, of those products is improving. The other thing is there are an increasing number of drugs that you can use to stimulate appetite. There's a new one coming out specifically for dogs that everyone's very excited about that is thought that it will be kind of what we've been waiting for a long time that should help increase appetite in dogs with kidney disease and other issues. There's a cat drug from the same company that hopefully will be coming out. But using more appetite stimulants is becoming more routine in cats with kidney disease. The other thing that we do a lot of here at our hospital is actually put in feeding tubes. And for a lot of pet owners, that seems like a very drastic step. But appetite in cats is often one of the first things to go. And there was actually a presentation and a paper that came out of a recent conference where they had a number of cats that were losing weight, wouldn't eat an appropriate diet for their kidney disease, and feeding tubes were placed. And some of those cats had feeding tubes for 5 years, meaning that those cats had a good quality of life and maintain weight and live with their kidney disease for that long. Because a lot of times what ends up being where we kind of draw the line and when we say goodbye or when we stop treatment is often when, you know, we can't maintain weight and they start wasting away and then everything just spirals. And so I think that's something that pet owners should consider more, because you can have really good quality of life.
And they stay at home with a feeding tube in place too.
Yep.
And that's what a lot of people don't realize. Could you please explain what a feeding tube is? I put them in several times, and clients initially, yes, they're aghast. And then they see it's like, Oh, that's not so bad. I can do that.
Yeah. So the most common types we use in cats with kidney disease, or sometimes dogs with kidney disease, more commonly cats, are called esophageal tubes or E tubes. And they go in the side of the neck, and they're little tubes that go in the side of the neck. They stick out maybe a couple inches, and you can get fancy little collars with all kinds of cute little patterns and stuff like that, plaids or holiday colors or cartoon characters. And basically, you blenderize canned food, and then you put it down the tube with a syringe, usually 3 times a day. And then they can eat anything that's appropriate for them to eat on their own. They can still eat treats or, you know, drink or stuff like that. But then if they're not eating enough food that day, you can kind of top them off and make sure they're getting what they need. It also can be a good way to give some, but not all, medications, because everybody, you know, who likes to pill their cat, right? Or try to get nasty tasting liquids into their cat. And so that can be a great way to get medications in, and a good way to put extra water too, because cats don't always tend to be good drinkers, even when they need the extra fluids. And so for a lot of owners, that can be something that can really make a difference. And I think kind of the trend for years was to kind of think of that as like a last-ditch effort, or, you know, something that you would do for a month or two to kind of prolong life. But I think as this study and these cases that they talked about at the conference suggest, this could potentially, if we were a little bit more aggressive at using this type of assisted feeding, there may be the potential that we could actually, you know, increase lifespan in some animals with kidney disease for maybe even years. And, you know, I think that's something that never one really thought of as something that was possible. But I think the most important thing to stress is this is never something that you should use if the quality of life overall isn't good. But this is something where if the big issue for quality of life seems to be appetite, that's potentially something that we can get around. And so, you know, that's something we really try to educate owners on, because I think it's something that, you know, a lot of vets may not be as experienced with using them long term and may not offer them to owners as an option. So some owners who might be willing to consider that, you know, may give up sooner than they may need to with that as an option.
And it's really not painful, and they just walk around with this little periscope popping out of their neck. We're chatting right now with Dr. Kaylin Hines. She's a board-certified veterinary nutritionist at Cummings School of Veterinary Medicine at Tufts, where she teaches biochemistry and clinical nutrition. We're going to be right back after the short break and talk about nutrition and cancer.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Everything we tried failed except the Dynavite.
The standard run-of-the-mill tests and treatments.
Cortisone.
Antihistamine.
Multiple creams.
Antibiotics.
Spray.
Multiple prescriptions.
Steroid injections.
Topical sprays.
The sharp antibiotics.
Steroid cream.
No results.
It was neglect. The other owners didn't care enough about him to take care of him and to give him the nutrition he needed.
A nutritional supplement like Dynavite.
To be the healthy, happy dog he is today.
Dinovite. com.
If you want the dog to be healthy, you got to feed it something healthy.
Put some nutrition in your dog.
The vet that I trust recommended Dynavite. The dog I have today, because of Dynavite, has a sparkle in his eye, a lush coat, healthy skin.
When you rescue a dog, you've got to feed him right for life.
Dynavite will make your dog a happy dog.
Dynavite is nutrition.
Dynavite for life.
859-428-1000.
859-428-1000.
Dinovite.com.
Hi, I'm Dana Humphrey, the founder of Whitegate PR. We have been specializing in PR and marketing in the pet industry for over 10 years. If you have a pet product or service you would like to promote, give us a call. We can help create awareness for your brand on TV, radio, magazines, newspapers, and blogs. Feel free to reach me directly at 619-414-9307 or learn more on our website at whitegatepr.com or follow us on Facebook.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to the Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio. The doctor is in, and we'll see you now.
Dr. Hines, we've been chatting so much about kidney disease, which is so common. I really want to, in these last few minutes, talk a little bit about cancer and diet. Is there a diet that can, number one, cause cancer, And in the second breath, is there a diet that can prevent cancer? Because we're all for people trying to be so careful of what we eat, and should you go vegan, and should you have the colorful diet, and is it the Mediterranean? And then we seem to be kind of stuck as to what comes in the can or the package for the dog, cat. Please explain.
Sure. I think that there's, you know, cancer is such an emotional type disease that I think we all, you know, desperately want to think that there's a way that we could prevent it or a way that we could cure it short of all of the toxic drugs and stuff that tend to be part of chemotherapy. And I think the challenge is, you know, actually kind of looking at the data and seeing what we have. And, you know, in people, we know that some foods made big headlines this year that processed meats. So things like hams and lunch meats and hot dogs and bacon and those kind of things have been associated with a greater risk of cancer. And there's certainly been some foods over the years that have been suggested may have some cancer prevention benefits, but we don't have any data that, you know, I see all the time on the internet that your pet got cancer because you fed a commercial food. We have no data to support that any specific type of pet diets makes it more likely that your pet is going to have cancer. Cancer is a type of disease that has many, many different causes. And, you know, like you mentioned earlier, genetics is a huge component of it. You know, there are environmental things. There may even be things like being overweight in people predisposes you to developing cancer. And we're not sure about the link in many cancers in dogs and cats yet, but there's a lot of other lifestyle factors other than just food. And so, you know, I think right now, blaming any one particular diet or diet strategy for causing your pet to develop cancer, really, we don't have a basis in fact on that right now. And then I think the hardest part for most of my clients to understand is that we also, on the other side of that, don't have a cancer diet. You know, we don't have a specific type of diet that has been shown to have a notable benefit for pets with cancer. And I think that's the hardest thing for a lot of people to accept, because we really want to think that there's this cancer diet. And I see this online all the time, you know, very strongly worded statements from websites saying, if you don't feed this type of diet that your pet, you know, your pet's cancer is going to get worse. If you feed this type of diet, that's going to fix it. But the honest truth is we have been putting millions of dollars into this kind of research in humans for decades. We still don't have any information in people on what the ideal type of diet is for people with cancer. And, you know, as is usually the case, research dollars and discoveries in pets generally lag behind what we have in people, particularly as it relates to cancer. And so, you know, there's no one magic diet, unfortunately, that, you know, that can fix our pets with cancer or change their prognosis. And, you know, that's certainly the holy grail. And I would love, you know, in my career to find some nutritional modifications, some supplements and or diet or, you know, other things that we can do from a nutrition perspective that don't have any side effects and have the potential to improve survival. But, you know, the honest truth is we're just not there yet.
It is frustrating. Thankfully, there are people like you that are out there that are looking. So hopefully in your lifetime, there will be something that we can do for this very devastating disease. Dr. Hines, as we wrap this up right now, is there one thing that you want pet parents to remember about feeding their pets for life?
I would say probably there are two very, very important things. The first thing is making sure that your pet is getting all the nutrients that he needs. So that means feeding either a well-balanced, made by a veterinary nutritionist, home-cooked diet or a quality commercial diet, not necessarily from the fanciest company, but from a well-established company that has a lot of experience, knows what they're doing. So feed that type of diet and feed that to keep your pet thin. Those are the two most important things that you can do to reduce health problems across the lifespan. And, you know, I think that the latter one, the letting your pet get too heavy, is probably the biggest pet health crisis we have right now, because so many diseases that we're seeing in pets now are at least, you know, worsened by excessive weight, if not directly caused by it.
Thank you. That is one. They get on me all the time at the office because I walk through a door and the client looks at me and their, you know, face kind of sags going, I know she hasn't lost weight. He hasn't lost weight yet. Going, That's right. You know, it's so important to keep that weight under control for so many different factors. Chubby looks cute in some respects, but it's just not the best thing for your pet. So thank you for reinforcing that. You've been listening today to Dr. Kaylin Hines. She is a board-certified veterinary nutritionist, and this is Dr. Bernadine Cruz. You've been listening to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio. If you have any questions, something that's really been bothering you, something that you want answered, please send me your questions at thepetdoctor@petliferadio.com. I'll see if I can get them answered for you on air. So listen again next week. We'll have more information on how to make you the best possible pet owner. Thanks for listening. Take care.
Pets can be a wonderful addition to your life because they're a member of the family. Keeping them healthy and happy is important. Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor with veterinary media consultant and veterinarian Dr. Bernadine Cruz. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. The Pet Doctor, on demand every week, only on PetLifeRadio.com.